You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at noplotonlylore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met.
Welcome back to No Plot, Only Lore, Josh's mom's favorite D&D podcast. Does your mom listen to D&D podcasts? Does she listen to our podcast?
She should start. She's laid up in the hospital for the next I don't know how long, so she's got nothing but time on her hands. So, yeah.
At the time of recording, we've got like 16, 17 episodes up and ready. We've got like hours of content that she could just be perusing.
If you're in the hospital right now,
thanks for listening.
If you're in the hospital, let us know if we put you there due to our incredibly hilarious jokes that made you fall down the stairs and break things.
Super hilarious and informative. That's what we aim to be.
Lethally hilarious.
You know, I don't think anyone has ever accused me of being that funny. Has anyone accused me of being funny? Oh, no.
No, what I mostly hear is that, like, I'm the comic relief and you're the, like, more stoic, borderline pretentious one of the pod, so...
Borderline?
I mean...
I need to get way more pretentious. Jesus.
Yeah. This is you at half strength. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you haven't even seen my final form. Let's fucking go.
I'll show you pretentious.
Yeah. So let's talk about adaptation and homage.
Yeah.
Today. Yeah.
This is just like a roundabout easy way for us to talk about everything that's D&D that isn't actually D&D, by, you know, pop culture-wise.
Mostly this is just an excuse for me to finally talk about my Baldur's Gate character on the pod.
Yeah. There's the truth there. You've been deep diving. It's not that Baldur's Gate bounced off me. It's just I chose maybe the worst way to play it, and so I still just can't get, like, sucked in like you have.
What is the worst way to play it? How did you approach Baldur's Gate 3?
I am playing a co-op campaign with another person who has already beat the game and has as wonky of a schedule as I do. So I play Baldur's Gate for 2 hours, like maybe every 3 weeks. So I got through Act One.
I've got like 300 hours on this game.
Yeah. I bet you if I pull it up, I've got less than a part-time job's worth of hours.
You should absolutely stop doing that and just fucking play the game.
I'm deeply committed. I have played 14 hours.
Wow. Okay. So 7 2-hour sessions.
Yeah.
Of Baldur's Gate 3. Okay.
Yes.
I didn't do that. I played it the fun way.
Yeah, it's really bad for engagement and like immersiveness. to do what I'm doing. Also, I realize now it's currently not installed because I play it so infrequently. It like sort of auto uninstalled to save space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I really.
That's horrifying.
Well, you know what? It's a self-defense mechanism because I can't afford to lose any more time out of my week to some new hobby/addiction.
300 hours, Josh. I need you to join me in this heroin, please.
No, Chris, I can't. Do you know how many games I have with 300 plus hours on them? Like,
too many.
It's way too many.
Get rid of one of those and start playing some Baldur's Gate instead. I fucking loved Baldur's Gate.
I bet you did. Yeah.
And part of that is that I am playing it in a way that is not the worst.
Okay.
I started playing a few months ago, many months ago, and just like went in completely blind. Hadn't read any reviews of it or anything. I just saw that there was a new Baldur's Gate game, and I'd already played 1 and 2 and loved them both.
Yeah.
And like, those came out, I think Baldur's Gate 1 had a very heavily edited version of the D&D 2 mechanics.
Yeah.
Baldur's Gate 2 was built with 3rd edition.
Yeah, like, I remember putting a significant amount of time into older Baldur's Gates, and I think the wonkiness of the rule set they were adapting is what kept me from having fun.
For Baldur's Gate 1, it was real wonky.
Yeah.
But Baldur's Gate 2 and then Neverwinter Nights after that.
Yeah.
Both of those were, I think, made with the 3rd edition rules for D&D. And both of those got so many hours of play out of me. And then I also started playing a bunch of, like, the fan-made content.
Right, right.
Afterwards. So I put, like, probably 1,000 hours into Neverwinter Nights over the course of multiple years.
And see, I think my problem was that, like, at the time those came out, I was playing some, like, isometric RPGs, but they were designed from the ground up to be, you know, played on the computer and using their own rule sets that didn't, like, have to conform to some arbitrary design logic, you know? Like,
right.
It's unfair to compare other isometric RPGs to things like Fallout 1 and 2, or
well, that's funny, because Fallout 1 and 2 were both made with GURPS.
Yeah, which is hilarious, because I hate GURPS.
Like, the entire system that they put together is just like a kit bash of GURPS, and it's great. It works real smooth when you've got a computer doing all of the rolling and math for you.
Right? Maybe that's their problem, is that they shipped a thing on paper instead of silicone, and it just didn't work. What else was I playing at the time that worked really well? I did play a bit of Planescape Torment.
Okay.
I
never got into that one, but I think it was mostly just that I never got a copy of it.
Yeah. I played some... do you remember Divinity Original Sin?
Yeah.
Yeah. I played some of that.
I'm pretty sure that's the same company that made this. That made Baldur's Gate 3.
Oh, that makes sense. I played some Jagged Alliance. I'm trying to see what else I played at the time. I remember playing... I can't tell if it was a Shadowrun modification or not. But there was some... I sunk too much time into some weird stuff that was like... steampunk-y? Like, wasn't crazy. Arcanum, here we go. I found it. I found it on the internet. Arcanum of Steamworks and Magic Obscura.
Everything that you just said gave me, like, weird 2005 flashbacks to people wearing gears on their top hat. So, and I'm having none of it, Josh. I'm having none of it.
So this game came out in 2001.
No!
Yeah, I'm trying to see if it was based on anything or if it was just their own system. Also, it was a Sierra game, and Sierra really influenced
I love Sierra games.
Yeah, they really influenced my RPG stuff for a long time.
Yeah,
I can't figure out. Nah, whatever. It's probably not that important. Because it doesn't seem. Oh, I see. I guess this was all developed by former Fallout people. Because it was a bunch of people from Interplay, and including Tim Kane, who
That tracks.
Yeah. So
No, Fallout Team was good. The first two Fallout games. I actually think that the first two Fallout games are some of the most important role playing games ever done on computer.
Yeah.
Like, I have a whole rant about how important Fallout 1 and 2 are.
Okay.
And how, going back to play them now, they feel really quaint.
Yeah.
But that's because they were the first ones that did a whole bunch of really important shit. Right, like the plot lines and the branching dialogue that you were seeing, like the incredibly complicated branching dialogue, relationships between characters, social skills used in interesting and complex ways. Just there's so much that they got right in those games that had never even been attempted yet, and it just kind of set the form for what we were going to be doing for computer role-playing games going forward. Yeah. Anyway, we're not here to talk about that, though. We're here to talk about how Baldur's Gate isn't actually D&D.
Right. It's very close to D&D. In fact, it steals a lot of things from D&D, but you really have to remember that it's aware of and taking advantage of technologies that don't exist on tabletop.
I would even back up a little further than that and say that it is a game that has many of the same rules as D&D, but it's a completely different game.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, the format is completely different, right? Like, you are playing through a story that has already been created and is all being dictated to you by voice actors who were in a studio who recorded all of their lines. There is no ability for improvisation.
Yeah.
There is no, like, you never speak as your character. You make dialogue choices.
Right, you never
speak as your character. This is not Dungeons and Dragons. This is an attempt at an approximation.
This is Dungeons and Dialogue Trees.
Dungeons and Dialogue Trees and double crossbows.
Yeah.
And like, there are some differences in the rule set as well, just to make it flow better in a computer role-playing game. Because like, there is some shit in Dungeons and Dragons that if you were trying to handle it automatically would just be clunky as all hell. I think probably my favorite example is the fact that guidance works on skill checks.
And yeah.
Some other checks.
Yeah, that's come up even like not that far, not that long ago. I was like, oh yeah, remember, this only works for certain things. We can't use this at the table because we've all been playing too much Baldur's Gate.
Yeah. And like, the one thing that I will get for it is that it's been a fantastic like gateway drug to D&D. Like, I've already got players at my table who would never have played D&D with us except they'd played Baldur's Gate beforehand.
Yeah. And it's
right. One of my players...
Go ahead.
One of my players had never picked up a set of dice before and had no interest in Dungeons & Dragons at all, but he got 35 hours into Baldur's Gate and was like, hey, is Baldur's Gate kind of like D&D? And we were like, it basically is the same thing. And he was like, sweet, sign me the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's a new player that's joined our campaign that I am 99% sure his entire exposure to, like, the world of tabletop RPGs was, wow, Baldur's Gate 3 sure is popular. That looks like fun. Mm-hmm. And now he's...
And it is.
He's deep. We've ruined that man so fast.
It doesn't take long. Yeah, you start buying books and trying to figure out character builds. That's the thing I do the most. Okay, so my confession on Baldur's Gate 3 is I haven't finished the game. I keep going back to the beginning to try new character builds.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again. And now I'm at the point where I'm just like tweaking those character builds and I still haven't finished the fucking game. And I need to buckle down and actually get it done. But every time I do, I'm like, but if I play an abjuration wizard with armor of Agathys, then I get like better shield points.
Yeah.
And I become basically invincible. there's so much of that. And that's another, I think, point against it being Dungeons and Dragons. And I'm not dragging the game for that. That's actually like the thing that I kind of want to talk about is like the nature of adaptation and like the ways that D&D has been adapted in the past. But like, it is very much an adaptation. And so the ability to go back and just retool your character completely from the ground up and then play through all of the exact same scenarios again is something that you will never have in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
Right, like, you can go back and like rebuild your character, you can play through the same campaign again, but there are going to be different choices that were made, and your DM is going to improvise in different ways, and you're going to improvise in different ways, and it's going to be a different experience each time. Where that just isn't the case.
Yeah, for sure. Like, the thing I love most about any RPG system like that is just, like, because, you know, I'm at the point where I just want to be, like, goofy and iterative. So, you know, having that freedom to just, like, let's just start again. Do it again. Whatever. Like, that's the best part for me.
Well, they also have a mechanic for changing your class in the middle of the game. So, like, you can go and talk to Withers, who's just a skeleton guy who hangs out at your camp.
Oh, right, that guy. Give him 100
gold, and he will reset your class completely.
I have not investigated that because I saw him and I was like, oh, he's there if you like die or something. I don't know. And then I wandered off because I'm really bad at like fully paying attention to the amount of dialogue that this game will throw at me.
it's so much.
Okay. If I can sidebar for a second, there is simultaneously way too much and not enough dialogue in some cases where like, it didn't fully explain to me that Withers could turn me into a completely different character, but also after like learning, after taking a potion that let me talk to dogs, I did not get enough information from my conversation with a dog to know that if I defend myself when he attacks me, I will no longer be a paladin. Like,
you find
a body in the woods and you talk to the dog and the dog's like, I'm real scared. I'm worried about my dead master. Don't you come near. I'm like, hey man, it's going to be okay. No, it's not. He bites me. I kick him back and suddenly I'm the bad guy.
Yeah. Now, if you pass that skill check, you can actually get that dog in your camp and he becomes summonable as a companion.
I mean, he's dead now.
Yeah, good luck getting him as a companion now, but
like, I kind of like the idea that like you have to pay attention to every interaction you have because you might wind up with a companion accidentally if you're nice to everybody or whatever. But obscuring something as important as becoming an Oathbreaker paladin behind a conversation with a dog that you probably can't actually talk to doesn't seem very fair to me.
Yeah, no, it's
like, am I just supposed to objectively know that kicking a vicious dog is a bad thing? It's biting me.
I mean,
what do I do? Run away?
Dogs is generally not something that is going to be rewarded.
These are life and death stakes.
And you're supposed to kick them. Yeah. I get where you're saying, like, as with any computer or console role-playing game, sometimes your dialogue options don't match up to the reality of the thing that is happening.
Yeah.
Or, like, there's something that you know must have made sense to the writer of the situation that doesn't make the same sense to you. And so you pick a dialogue option that you think is going to be, like, neutral or good, and then somebody has, like, a crazy off-the-chain reaction to that.
Yeah.
Right. And they like get really mad at you, or you have like a mildly insulting answer for a thing and they take it as playful.
Yeah.
Right. And like you have no idea what the tonality is going to be like before you choose those dialogue options. But once you've made them, oh boy, you're an anti-paladin now.
Yeah.
And here, your like, character has changed fundamentally because of your interaction with this silly dog.
Right, and I was very much trying to like play the straight-laced paladin the whole time. And all I did was defend myself against what I thought was a hostile creature because I'm playing a video game. They didn't make it clear that the option is to just like run away from a mad dog.
Yeah. Or you could do non-lethal damage, but non-lethal damage is hidden behind a weird sub-menu.
Right!
Like, were you aware that you can do non-lethal damage?
I am now. Okay. I had a... There was apparently at some point in this, like, weird integrated tutorial where it was like, select non-lethal damage to knock this person out. I'm like, all right, cool. And that was, like, 10 hours ago. So...
Right.
That information is gone because, for the most part, I kill the goblins. I don't just run around punching them, like, to sleep.
There is one character interaction. So the drow lady in the goblin camp. Depending on the plot options that you decide to go through, you can either side with her and like light the Druid Grove on fire.
Right.
Or you can kill her to save the Druid that's in the dungeon. And most of the time, if you're playing a good character, that's going to be the choice you go with, right? Like, you're going to clear out all the bosses.
Yeah.
Fucking goblin camp and call it a day. But if you do non-lethal damage on her in this phase, she actually shows up in the second act.
Oh.
And you can recruit her as a companion without having to light the Druid Grove on fire.
Well, I didn't know that.
Me either, until somebody on the internet told me. And so I started a new game.
Well, and that's simultaneously like the blessing and the curse of a game like Baldur's Gate 3. It is
right.
Some of the most intricate game development you've ever seen. But like, it's basically the antithesis of completionism. Because
yeah,
you're never like yeah. When I played, let's say, Skyrim. I have hundreds of hours in Skyrim. It's all on one character. Yeah. I did everything on them. And all of the choices were so binary that I understand the directions they could have gone. So I have made a secondary character that's done some of the major stuff from the other side just to see what it was like. And honestly, I don't feel like I missed anything. Because, again, it was so binary. It's just like, oh, yeah, this side won the fight or whatever. Like, no big deal.
Well, I think that's something that, like, if I were to take something away from this design choice, it's that no two people playing this game blind for the first time are going to have the same experience with it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, you could be having water cooler talk about this game, and we did at my workplace, because, like, I'm not the only person who's playing it.
Yeah.
And we would discuss, like, directions that we had taken in the game. And I would be like, well, hey, did you do this thing? And they were like, no, I did this other thing instead. I had no idea that that existed. And I was like, I had no idea the thing that you just said existed. And so you'd have to like go back and like take a look at what the other path was looking like. And I think that's really interesting as a game design choice. I don't think it's sustainable in the media environment that we live in.
No, like, no.
I found out that I can recruit Minthara that way by watching a YouTube video.
Which is also like, in my mind, like a very big point against Baldur's Gate is that there is a lot of stuff like some people really like discoverability or whatever, but like it feels like they went too far. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
they've hidden too many things under like non-obvious interactions to the point where like you need almost to like sit down and spend a couple of hours watching YouTube to find all the weird options that you could have had for your playthrough that aren't like, you know, expressly manifest as you walk through the storyline of the game.
My recommended videos right now is just a fucking mile of like,
yeah,
chill vibes to study to, and then Baldur's Gate content. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Welcome to the age of the algorithm, where if you watch two or three videos, they suddenly decide that that's your entire personality for the next week, and that's all you get served up.
You know what? I haven't seen a Jordan Peterson video in a while, though. I'm feeling pretty good about that.
Oh, thank God for that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, like, as an adaptation, I think Baldur's Gate is probably the closest you're going to get to an actual session of D&D until we have AI DMs, right? Like, and even then, like, the AI DMs scare me. Right. So we're not going to get too hard into that. But, like, if you're going to be playing D&D on a computer by yourself,
yeah,
I think Baldur's Gate 3 is probably the closest you're going to get to that kind of experience.
Yeah.
But it's still an adaptation, and it still has...
Right.
Like the disconnects that you would expect to see from like adaptation of a thing. So
sure. Well, again, like
the rules are slightly different.
And yeah, also it's got to rein in like complete freedom, right? Into like a certain box it can operate in. Cause it's not like you're sitting there with like literally AI procedurally generating like consequences to your choices or whatever stupid thing you could decide to do. Like it's a game. It's not, you know, it can't be 500 gigabytes on your computer of just like what ifs, right?
That would be kind of cool though.
I mean, sure. In theory, that would be kind of cool, but also like, you know for a fact they don't have playtesters like me who will make that game scream for mercy within 10 minutes.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And I do that to like normal, like well-designed functional games just by being myself, let alone having an infinite, you know, sandbox to play in.
Yeah, no, that's true. What about other adaptation types? Like, did you see Dungeons and Dragons: Honor Among Thieves?
I did. I saw it in theaters, like a good boy, because I firmly believe in voting with your wallet, and I was also trying to get that big empty D20 popcorn bucket, which it turns out never really made it to Canada, which is...
God damn it.
BS. What?
I just said god damn it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think the same thing happened with the fuckable bucket that came out with for Dune.
Right.
I didn't see any of those.
The Dune Worm Fleshlight bucket. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see any of those at the theater when I was there.
I
could have just been run out.
No, apparently, like, the D20 bucket only made it to Toronto, which is, like, the most frustrating part of being Canadian is that we only have three cities according to the rest of the North America. So...
What's the third one?
There's Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal. That's it.
Oh, I forgot about Montreal.
Well, it's burned into my memory because every band I want to see only goes to those three cities on their Canadian tour.
Right. Yeah. I have the benefit of living across a ferry from Vancouver.
Right.
So I do have the opportunity to get over to Vancouver for a lot of those things if I want to. I don't want to pay ferry costs for it necessarily, but like...
No, but
I can get there.
It's like, I don't want to go to the party, but I want to be invited, you know? Then I can choose.
Yeah. So what did you think about D&D Honor Among Thieves?
I thought it was a good way to sort of introduce what at its like core D&D is about, without getting too like mechanics heavy. Like there was lots of times where you would see like a puzzle or some sort of spell or something like that, and people who had played D&D could be like, oh, I know what that's referencing. Haha, good for me. I'm so smart. But like the average moviegoer didn't get bogged down with watching like Jarnathan roll a D20 to see if he made his athletics or his acrobatics check to avoid getting taken out the window or whatever. Like,
right.
Yeah, it's, yeah, I thought it was also very smart of them to like really cut like I think a pretty broad swath through like things to introduce, in a way that like didn't get it bogged down. Like, you see those, what are they called? The little brains on four legs.
Intellect devourers.
I knew it was a devourer of some sort. Intellect devourers. You see them, but like, they're not like, first of all, they don't point at them and be like, oh my god, that is an intellect devourer. I better watch out because blah, 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 exposition rules.
That's funny. They actually, they absolutely do.
Well, kind of.
It's funny that you say that because like the paladin is like, intellect devourers, they'll only eat like something of intelligence. And then the like intellect devourers just walk past them.
Right.
Is that the intellect devourers just like ignore them because they're not intelligent enough to eat.
Right. But like, they were a quick gag and then gone.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And there was lots of things that just like popped up for a brief flash and made the world feel richer and more true to what like D&D is, and then left. Mm-hmm. And where it's like, hey, no, remember, we're trying to tell a story about this adventure. Like, there's lots of opportunities to explore other stuff in other games, right?
Yeah, and I appreciated that they were coming away from some of the stuff that we've seen all the time.
Right.
Like there is a dragon in this movie, and he is very, very fat, and It's hilarious, and it's a great visual bit, but it isn't like the standard dragon that you see in Game of Thrones.
Right.
Right, like it's big and it's scary, but it's big and it's scary for completely different reasons than the Game of Thrones dragons would be.
But
right? we're all used to dragons. We all know what dragons look like.
Right. But also,
but this one,
he's lore accurate, which is the best part.
Exists.
Like, yeah, they dug into the weird corners of D&D and brought them out to the light. Be like, hey, by the way, like we're not all about, because so I think that's my big problem with like previous D&D media is that it stayed in the very like safe and familiar zones and stayed in a lot of tropes and like didn't differentiate itself from like other high fantasy offerings in a way that made it memorable.
Other than by being incredibly bad.
Right. Well, yeah.
Yeah, there's always that.
The first Dungeons and Dragons movie with one of the Wayans brothers, I don't remember which. And Thora Birch.
They're the same person.
And Thora Birch and the Wayans brothers?
No, all of the Wayans brothers are the same person. It's
okay.
You just hire the Wayans brothers and somebody shows up and you're like, that looks like a Wayans.
And is it Michael Ironside?
It probably
Jeremy
was.
Jeremy Irons.
Oh, okay.
Just chewing scenery.
That actually sounds like Jeremy like Irons, yeah.
Yeah, he was just like, he took his Scar performance and dialed it up to 11.
Yeah.
He was just so campy and goofy and was the best part of that movie, which is not hard for that movie.
No. Low bar to clear.
Yeah. I don't even remember the name of the kid that played the lead. I don't think I've seen him in anything since.
Yeah, there's probably a good reason for that. Well, and I'm sure it's one of those situations where, like, hey, this is your first foray into acting. They're, like, billing it to him as, like, this is a major IP and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, it just kills his career. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever see the second one?
No. God, no. I didn't see the first one for a very long time, and I don't even fully remember it. Like,
yeah. The second one was a direct-to-DVD sequel.
Oh, that's already bad.
Yeah. It was a significantly more serious movie.
Yeah.
And the only through line between the two movies was that the guy with the tentacle ears came back.
Oh, good.
He was the only actor to return from the original movie.
That's the guy you want. Definitely main billing on that one.
He was the main villain. He did a great job.
The
movie itself was better than the first one.
That's okay. Good for him. I will say, like, for the record, it was Marlon Wayans.
Oh, okay.
Because he kind of does everything. I don't really know why they refer to the Wayans brothers anymore, because like it's just him.
I think I refer to the Wayans brothers because I am from the 1900s.
Right.
That is how I remember them, is as a duo doing haha funny us doing drag.
Oh, right.
Like that's my exposure to their work outside of like the geek stuff that I've watched. So, and like not another teen movie, but again, I think it was only like one of them.
Yeah.
Might have been the same one. So like my exposure to their work is fairly limited, but I largely remember them as being billed as the Wayans brothers.
Yeah, that's fair. White chicks did impact the culture in a significant way.
Okay.
Didn't White Chicks give us that like Terry Crews car singing gif? Like, that's a pretty important gif culturally.
Pretty important gif culturally, and also Terry Crews just being like open and cool that his date was either a trans woman or a cross-dressing dude.
Very clearly,
Yeah, like super chill with it. Thanks, Terry.
I also
always an ally.
I forgot the D&D movie had Tom Baker in it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, the fourth Doctor and his iconic scarf were also in the D&D movie.
The scarf wasn't.
Well, okay, whatever.
He was wearing a scarf, though. He was playing like a druid or some shit.
Close enough.
I don't remember much about that movie. It's been a very long time since I've watched it, and it's going to be a very long time before I watch it again.
Oh, the first time we do like a live stream, it's going to be a movie night with the first D&D movie. Yeah.
We'll have to watch the second one as well. We'll do like a 4-hour stream.
Oh my
we'll watch
God.
Both of them, and I will torture you with the second one as well.
Great. Do I get like rewarded later with the third one? Or
We can watch Battleship after.
Speaking of adaptations. God. Okay, yeah. So, all right. Like, behind the curtain a little bit, we were discussing the idea of talking about, like, D&D and pulp culture in general. And I was like, well, hey, are we just going to talk about D&D? Are we going to talk about, like, all sorts of tabletop stuff? Because, you know, there's lots of media for, like, we've discussed 40K before. There's tons of different 40K media. There's even been, like, there are Pathfinder board games and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And video games, because we're talking about video games. And what's the first thing that Christopher suggests? It's it's Battleship the movie.
So good.
Have you seen it?
I have seen some clips.
Because I watched the full movie. Like, as...
Did you?
As an unabashed Channing Tatum stan.
Oh yeah.
That
was great.
Oh, sorry. I keep forgetting it's not actually Channing Tatum. It's
fake Channing Tatum.
It's wish.com Channing Tatum. Taylor Kitsch.
Tamu.
Oh, right. I forgot. Wish and Alibaba died. Now it's just Timu or whatever.
Yeah.
Frickin' Taylor Kitsch. Remember when Taylor Kitsch was supposed to be the next big star and then they did that, like, the John Carter movie, and everyone was like, oh, they're finally gonna try a new Princess of Mars, and then they did that and they were like, oh no.
It would have been an okay movie. Like, I didn't hate John Carpenter of Mars.
John Carter?
I probably should have. John
Carter. Wait, John Carpenter of Mars would be fucking incredible.
It'd be so good.
Let's make that happen. I love that idea so much.
John, call my agent. We got some talking to do. No, John Carter of Mars. I watched it in the theater on a date, and I liked it significantly more than my date did.
It's a fun movie. They shot it in the knees, like, almost immediately. First of all,
yeah.
Changing the name to something boring ass like John Carter, which does nothing to tie it into, like, the history of the novels, or just like the fact that it's a cool sci-fi movie. There's like, no, Steve the dude guy. You're like, all right, well, that doesn't sound boring. Let's go. Like
Josh Vardy on Mars.
Hey, that's a great movie. How dare you? I like legitimately curious what else opened on the same day with it that would have drawn more people. Cause they really just did everything they could to tank it. Like, a March release is so close to that, like, February wasteland that...
I don't remember. I remember that I was pretty excited to see it, and then I actually had a pretty good time, because it was, like, goofy and kind of tongue-in-cheek, and I was taking it very much in, like, a... I was accepting it in a Starship Troopers style of movie, right? Like, I was accepting that it was a bit of a pastiche, and... that it wasn't going to be taking itself too terribly seriously. And my date was very concerned about my taste after that.
Which, like, yeah, like, honestly, good on her having good judgment that way. Yeah, but
no, fair.
It's just, okay. Looking at what else came out that day, all John Carpenter had to do was just say, like, John Carpenter of Mars or something like that. Because it was competing with an Eddie Murphy, like, dumpster movie called 1,000 Words. I don't know if you remember that one. And then, like, nothing at all I recognized whatsoever until Salmon Fishing in the Yemen, which is, like, just, yeah, if not a great comparison. And then Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Title.
Yeah, yeah. Jiro Dreams of
Sushi was great.
Unbelievable documentary, but like
fantastic.
The kind of it's not competition for John Carter, right?
No. Very different kind of movie, but yeah, I really enjoyed Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
And then literally nothing else released that day have I ever even heard of at all, right?
They hamstrung that one real hard. And I think it's because they realized that, like, it isn't a good movie.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's not... It's a fun movie.
It's fine.
I enjoyed the movie.
It's adequate.
It's not a good movie.
No.
Yeah.
But you do get to see Mark Strong at his, like, Mark Strongiest.
He is very Mark Strong.
Yeah. And I love everything that guy does.
I'm not super familiar with his oeuvre.
The Gentleman.
Okay.
Hold on, what's...
Gentleman's fine.
It's great. He was in... Sorry. Yeah, the Kingsman. He's in Sherlock Holmes. Okay. Shazam. He's the villain in Shazam.
Okay, yeah.
He's in The Imitation Game. He's in...
Yeah.
He's just so good. Green Lantern. Rock and Rolla. Yeah. Ah! Kick-Ass!
Yeah, now that I've got his head in my head.
Yeah, now that you're thinking about who he actually is, you're like, oh yeah, actually this guy is a great character actor.
Yeah, he makes every movie he's in better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for Kingsman. John Carter.
Except for John Carter. But
I mean,
yeah, his role in Kingsman was really strong.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, we're real off track.
Yeah, sorry. We got talking about weird adaptations of tabletop stuff, and you had to bring up Battleship. Yeah.
Battleship. I think my favorite thing about that I've ever seen about Battleship was it was used as an example for how to, like, how Michael Bay is very good at one specific style of thing.
Right. Yeah.
Because when you try to imitate it, it doesn't work. Right. And like Battleship is very much trying to be a Michael Bay film.
Yeah.
And failing. Right, especially like with like swinging low around your protagonist with the telephoto to get like the big like movement of the background was used as an example of just like when Michael Bay does that, there's a lot happening in the frame, right? Like there's a lot of movement that's occurring in the frame,
right?
And in Battleship, it's just a lot of the ocean.
Well, also famously in the game Battleship, which they were weirdly slavish to, none of the warring pieces move whatsoever.
Good. Good. Yeah. So, adapting a role-playing game into a movie has taken a couple of tries.
Yeah.
To get it, I think, right in tone. Like, I think that's the thing that Honor Among Thieves did really, really well.
Yeah.
Was the tone of that movie was pitch perfect.
Yeah.
Right? It felt like a campaign that me and my friends have played.
Yeah.
The first one tried to take itself too seriously when it wasn't doing offhand jokes, and then the second one tried to take itself too seriously way too hard. And then Honor Among Thieves was just a good, fun movie.
Yeah.
About going on an adventure and having relationships with people.
Yeah. And I think what it did well was get to, like, the heart of what D&D is. It's the relationships between characters and a bit of fun, high-speed problem-solving.
And I didn't realize that we are currently kicking at like the 50-minute point. We've got a lot of stuff to cover. This might end up being a two-parter.
That's fine.
Books.
So, yeah. Oh God, books.
Do we want to talk about books?
If we have to. Okay. Listen. Let's talk about the big one that everyone probably recognizes immediately. Driss Dil-fucking-Durden, whatever his name is, and the mediocre.
Sorry, you gave me shit earlier. I called him Drizzt, and you said Drizzt.
Yeah,
very like very firmly, and then you're gonna come back and like mispronounce his fucking name. Come on, bruh.
I don't care about the rest of it. Just being pedantic about the first word. Listen, R.A. Salvatore has gotten better at writing. I will say that. So I accidentally read a trilogy of Drizzt set when he was still initially in Menzoberranzan. And I understand now that those books were written much later in the series. Okay. I went back and tried to read the first book in the series because that's what I do. And it was, I don't often describe books as like unreadable, but that thing was campfire fuel. It was just, I'm not an elitist when it comes to books. I chewed through like the Hunger Games stuff, which is just like very light YA stuff. You know, I read the schlockiest Black Library publications. And to say that it was amateurish is, I feel like, a direct insult to NaNoWriMo.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Small confession.
Yeah.
I have never read an R.A. Salvatore novel.
Okay.
Not one.
Good for you.
I read the Dragonlance books.
Yeah.
When I was a youngin.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed them when I was young.
Yeah.
Started reading one of them to my son, and I was having a good time, and he was bored.
Yeah, I remember, I've only read one of them that I picked up from, like, a used bookstore, and some of the characters were sort of interesting, and one of them was so off-putting that I didn't bother to read another book.
Was it Raistlin?
No, Raistlin was fine. You know who it was. We've talked about him before.
It was fucking Tazelhoff Burfoot.
Yeah, that's the one.
Taz.
So to, like, slog through how slow those books can be and then be punished with the appearance of Taz really put me off that whole series.
Oh my gosh. All right. I have occasionally hung out with Dave Gross
at
the store because he's an Edmontonian.
Yeah.
And I would come in every once in a while. I've never read any of his books. I hear they're great. Like that.
The fact that I
I
read a lot of fiction and I've never heard of this person probably tells you something about the quality of them.
The first time his name came to my attention as an author, because like for a while he was just coming in and he was a client.
Just a guy.
And, like he was just a guy. And like he was fine to talk to and he was fun and he told me that he was a writer and I was like fucking cool. And but the first time his name came to my attention was actually Penny Arcade. This was back when they were doing the actual play stuff that they were doing. And there was like a whole write-up about how great his D&D books are. And so I mentioned it to him when he came into the store and he was like, oh yeah, that's really flattering. And I was like, okay, maybe I should read this guy's books. And then I just never did. And I feel kind of bad about it because he is a really sweet dude, but just literally never picked up one of his books.
I mean, he seems like a nice guy, but I'm just looking, I don't know. He's got stuff on Goodreads, I guess. It, like, overall, his books are average, like, 4 stars, which seems okay. Yeah. 3.5, 4. Huh. It seems like he's switched to writing primarily about Pathfinder.
Yes. That has been a big thing. Like, when I knew him, it was during the 4th edition transfer, where everybody was up in arms about D&D changing their edition.
Okay.
And so a lot of the people that I knew in the industry moved over to Pathfinder because they were uninterested in doing whatever 4th was up to.
I see.
And I think Dave was one of the folks that hopped on that train.
Okay.
But, yeah. Literally never.
Like, yeah.
I actually have a bit of a prejudice against D&D novels.
Mm.
And like, to be clear, it is not a matter of quality. Because, like, I read some of the absolute worst bullshit books. Right, like, I am a huge proponent of progression fantasy novels that are fan fiction level at their best. and at their worst are just absolute fucking schlock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't read D&D books.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think we've discussed this on the pod before, but a couple of years ago, I found someone on an upcycling group local to me that was just giving away a bunch of D&D books. And
yeah.
I got, well, not stuck with, I stuck my neck out because I was curious. And I got a combination of things. Most interestingly, a bunch of old Forgotten Realms novels, including stuff about like Elminster and his early days and stuff like that. I think that stuff maybe has value in like just wanting to enrich the world you're in, but it's so just, it feels like homework. It feels like a chore right. to read, to get that history. I tried, this lady apparently had a very specific taste in what she read. There's a lot of stuff from this Christopher Rowley guy. Who I think is writing like D&D adjacent stuff, but like the titles of the books are like A Sword for a Dragon, and like right on the cover of the book is a dragon holding a sword, and by chapter 2 this dragon has received no less than 3 new swords.
That is so many swords.
It's far
more swords than he has hands.
Yeah, and it turns out I'd never thought of dragons as having hands, but this guy is really breaking the mold.
In my head now, he's doing that thing from One Piece where he's got like one sword in either hand and then he's got a third one in his mouth.
I didn't even get far enough into him to like, okay, look, the whole point of the series is that dragons are like intelligent and you can have like handlers for them and they'll join the army. Except the kid, the person who handles him is like 15, 16, 17. So 2 chapters in, he is as horny as any teenager you've ever met and has multiple times been like, boy, howdy, I can't wait to go to the big city and visit the brothels. And I'm like, this is odd. Like, it's just, I'm not normally like squeamish in fiction, but this is just weird behavior for this child.
You read the Warhammer 40K books, like you're fine doing some grim, dark, like awfulness. That's just some deviant nonsense.
Oh yeah, deviant is the word for it.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have to do a like second installment of this for all the homages. I did not expect us to take this much time talking about the D&D movies.
Well, I mean, yeah, like, you know us. We get down a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And we vary and whatever. I think we do need to do a part 2 where we talk about specifically, like, live play stuff, adaptations of that live play. You know, obviously there's plenty of referential work in, like, other media. So, yeah, like, let's put a pin in it for now. And we'll come back to it next week and continue talking about all the fun ways that society likes to talk about D&D.
And that means that I get to assign you homework of watching the Delicious in Dungeon anime because
it's great. A double kick in the dink. I don't want to watch anime at the best of times, and now I have to for my like not for job.
Homework.
Mean.
Hey, thanks for making it all the way through this episode of No Plot, Only Lore. If you're looking for more, you can always find us at noplotonlylore.com and on all the very best podcast platforms. If you like what you heard today, please share, rate, and review the show to feed my never-ending need for attention and validation.